This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There are more than a few guys who know the exact spot where their AM radio will pull in play-by-play from cities they haven't lived in for 20 years, who smile secretly when the best player on a rival team pulls a hamstring, who can't stand the enemy and don't have a lot of use for the clowns who run his team either. Sports fans. If you recognize yourself in there, or if you'd like to understand someone like that, Joe Queenan's new book is for you. True Believers is his attempt to explain why he's wasted so much of his life watching idiotic games, why it matters, and describing the characteristics of the many varied tribes who fill the grandstands, bar stools, and couches of America. What kinds of fans have you known and despised? What kind of fan are you? Is there a team that you're obsessed with? Do you have to live with a sports fan? Why does this stuff matter? Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now to talk about the trials and tribulations of such unbridled passion is Joe Queenan. The full title of his new book is True Believers, The Tragic Inner Life of Sports Fans. And he's with us from our bureau in New York. And always good to have you on the program, Joe.
Thank you.
And wanted to begin by asking you, you lay out certain rules for fans. What are they?
Well, you can start by wearing the hat correctly. It's actually supposed to be a visor that's supposed to keep the sun out. So that's for starters. But basic things like, I mean, the single most important thing is you have to root for the home team, because if they don't win, it's a shame. And rooting for teams from places that you do not have any geographical connection with, either because you grew up there or because your dad grew up there, it just leads to things like John Walker Lind, basically. It just leads to a kind of moral arbitrariness where what's going on in New York right now is everybody in New York is a Yankees fan. And I can distinctly remember in 1986 when everybody in New York was a Mets fan. So I think that that's, I really believe in tradition and I really believe in regionalism. And I believe that you should have some kind of theme to your life that runs through it. And I am appalled by people who change allegiances at the drop of a hat.
You are most appalled by that characteristic fan known as the front runner. Describe for us your encounter with a man wearing a Villanova jacket in New York.
In 1985, Georgetown had a great, great basketball team that Patrick Ewing was the captain of, and they were supposed to completely destroy Villanova, which was a team of underachievers. And Villanova played an absolutely great game and managed to beat Georgetown by 2 points, and it was the biggest upset in the history of the NCAA tournament. The next day, I was walking down 42nd Street in New York at 9 o'clock in the morning, and there's a guy there who has a brand new Villanova University jacket on. And I got talking to him, and he didn't go to Villanova. He didn't actually know where Villanova was. He couldn't identify any of the famous players from Villanova, which I could because I went to St. Joseph's University, which is also in Philadelphia, and we hate Villanova. So this was a guy who literally waited until Villanova won the game and then got up at 8 o'clock in the morning so he could be the first person in the sporting goods store to have a Villanova University jacket in New York City. I mean, it's just, it's criminal behavior.
Hatred plays a large part in this book.
Yes. And one of the reasons that the National Football League, I think, is superior to all the other leagues, aside from the fact they don't have an absolute ding-dong like Bud Selig running the organization, is that they preserved the regional hatred. So if you go to see, if you're a Giants fan, for example, or if you're a Redskins fan, you get to see the Philadelphia Eagles, who you hate, twice a year, the New York Giants, who you hate, and the Dallas Cowboys, who you really, really hate, twice a year. And you also probably get to see the Cardinals, who you hate, but not as much as those other teams. And the that sense of the inner city rivalry that is very, very, very profound is one of the things that the NFL hung on to, and the other leagues have lost it. The baseball in particular. When I was a kid growing up, the Phillies were rivals with the Pittsburgh Pirates, who were across the state, and now the Pirates are in a different division, and that rivalry has been disrupted. So, yeah, hatred's a I think hatred is a very positive emotion. It's always worked for me.
Yeah. I hate to break it to you, though, but the Cards have been rotated out of the NFC East. They're now in the NFC West.
But they still play those other teams once a year.
And every once in a while, somebody will notice.
It's really a shame what happened to the Cardinals, because they're a franchise that just roams from one city to the other. I think they went 50 years without winning a playoff game and nobody even noticed.
Our telephone number again is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joe Queenan is with us. His new book is True Believers. And let's go to Harris, who joins us on the line from Compton, California.
Yes, I'm a sports editor, but I cover USC, and my dad went there, and I'm inspired by them. But I've always been a Notre Dame fan since we lived in the Orient as a small kid. Isn't it acceptable in this case, because it's Notre Dame, to be, a great fan? You know, my years is gloom when they don't win the championship.
I think Mr. Queenan shares your affliction, but go ahead, Joe.
I have a whole chapter of the book devoted to the color green. Notre Dame, which is a positive green, and the New York Jets, which is a very negative green. And I grew up in Philadelphia, and people in Philadelphia don't care about college football. I was once at a dinner with a bunch of people from Penn State who were shocked to find out that nobody in Philadelphia actually cares about the Nittany Lions. We only care about the Eagles. The single exception to that is people all over the United States love Notre Dame. Now, in my case, it's because I'm Irish, I'm Catholic, my parents, my mother was born in Ireland, my grandparents came from Ireland. I know a few Irish Catholics who don't root for Notre Dame, and I am sure that they will go to the deepest pit of hell, which is, in fact, actually downtown South Bend, Indiana, an appalling city. I don't know in your case why you're a Notre Dame fan, but there's 40 million of Notre Dame fans. They basically have their own television network, so welcome aboard.
Yeah, I will tell you this, why I'm a Notre Dame fan. What's his name, Pat O'Brien? The books on Newt Rodney and Inspiration. And
yes.
Well, I'm an honorary, in the Army, they used to say I'm from the southern part of Ireland, because I'm an honorary Irish person. I'm Black American, but when it comes to Notre Dame, I'm all Notre Dame.
Yeah, I remember when, the tight end, Obradovich, graduated from Notre Dame, and somebody interviewed him on TV after he got drafted into the NFL and asked him what he hoped to do, and he said, I hope to get my name pronounced Obradovich.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks for the call, Harris.
There's another thing about Notre Dame, which is easily forgotten, though, because Irish Americans have become so prosperous. But when Notre Dame first achieved its success in the 30s, under 20s and 30s under Newt Rockne and Frank Leahy, that, as much as the erecting of St. Patrick's Cathedral, were very, very important events for the psyche of the Irish American, because it indicated that we had arrived in this country. Hmm. Obviously, Irish Americans still cling to that and still try to pretend that we're like really poor people just getting off the boat, when in fact we control all the police departments and most of the major stock exchanges. But still, there was a real sense that, with my dad in particular, that Notre Dame was North, Notre Dame was Catholic, Notre Dame was Irish, and a lot of that tradition has remained.
As long as we're talking about Notre Dame, did you bring a copy of your book in?
Yes, I did.
Would you turn, please, to page 100? And there's a description of your visit to Notre Dame. Down in that big paragraph towards the bottom, the sentence beginning, supporting a particular team. Would you read the rest of that paragraph?
On page 100?
Yeah.
I think you're working from supporting a particular team and vilifying its opponents necessitated an inexplicable bonding process whereby an army of complete strangers alchemically metamorphosed into one's sworn kinsmen. Yesterday I was looking at this outfit with the jaundiced journalist's eye, chuckling at their unreconstructed paddywhackery. Now they were my brothers and sisters. Yesterday their obsessive hibernophilia was getting on my nerves. Now I was ready to march into hell for a heavenly cause with them at my side. Of course, it helped that when we marched through the gates of hell together, the armies of Satan would be solid 17-point underdogs.
I love that passage. Joe Queenan reading from his book, True Believers. Let's get back to the phones. John joins us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you, Neil?
All right.
I was calling in to say I'm a professional photographer and I work in sports. That's my particular area. And I had a couple funny things to say. As one is, some of my friends that work actually for teams in the front office have told me that in order to maintain their sanity, sometimes fans will call in and say, "I'm your biggest fan." And they would think to themselves, "We've got some pretty big fans. They can take up 2-3 seats and that." And that would help them. And then recently, my daughter is 4.5, and she wanted to go to a baseball game with me. So we went as a fan, and I had to tell her, it was at Jacobs Field with the Indians, I had to tell her, "You can't cheer for the guys with the green jerseys. You have to cheer for the guys with the white jerseys." And she got it then.
She got it. Well, Cleveland is a particularly obsessed place. We have a cut of tape here of about a guy named John Thompson, and a huge Cleveland Browns fan, and he was part of that famed Dog Pound group.
Yes,
and,
John is Big Dog.
Yeah, and this is the sound of him getting his name changed.
"The court feels that you have shown reasonable and proper cause for changing your name to John Big Dog Thompson. So the court will grant that today."
Thank you very much.
Thank you. A fan's investment starts as a child when they're growing up with their best friend and they get their trading card and they take their trading card and they say, "Hey, Mike, this is your favorite player. You have my favorite player. Can we trade?" And you get that first favorite player in a trading card you never forget. And that guy becomes your hero forever.
John Big Dog Thompson, he not only paints his face and sports rubber dog masks, but has marketed his own line of Big Dog brand hot dogs and breakfast cereal, and obviously in 1999 officially became a Big Dog. He's a character there in Cleveland, John?
Yes, actually John has been to my house. I've photographed him for when the new Browns team came back. There was a cable television publication that wanted to put him on the cover. And so I will state that he's a normal person.
But Joe Queenan, you don't have a lot of use for these types.
Oh, I actually, I'm not so crazy about the people who make the game all about them, like Fireman Ed for the New York Jets, because it tends to, I personally am interested in the team, I'm interested in the sport, and I'm interested in them winning. But what I do find interesting is, people talk about how Philadelphia, of the cities that has the four major teams, has gone the longest without winning, which is true, since 1983. But Cleveland only has three major teams. Cleveland's gone since 1964, since the Browns beat the Colts, which was an upset. The Indians haven't won since 1948. The Cleveland Cavaliers have never won. So basically, the city has gone since 1964 without having a ticker tape parade, and you can't find more intense sports fans in the United States than you'll find in Cleveland. The sports fans in the towns like Cleveland, Chicago, Boston, Philly, Baltimore are much, much more rabid and much, much more intense and much, much loyaler than the teams in the big cities like L.A. and New York.
John, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we're speaking with Joe Queenan. His new book is True Believers, the Tragic Inner Life of Sports Fans. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we have an email question from Rob Schaffner in Denver, Colorado. I'd like to hear your guest speak about good sportsmanship in today's day and age. How does one fuel a healthy rivalry without hating people who are fans of a rival team?
You got me. I have absolutely no idea. I was in Edinburgh last year, Edinburgh, Scotland, and I saw a match between the Scottish national rugby team and the French national rugby team. The Scottish rugby team is horrible, and the French rugby team is great, so they annihilated them. But the stadium was filled with 60,000 people, 50,000 Scots, 10,000 French people. The Scots were all dressed like Braveheart. They all had kilts on. They all had their faces painted. Fat.
I hope they didn't recreate that famous scene from Braveheart.
They did not. No, but what was interesting was you had to remember the Scots and the French like each other because of their history of hating the English. So the French kind of laid off the Scots in the game. But what was interesting was that the French did not sit in their own section. They sat right amongst the Scots, and everybody had a great time watching this ferocious, violent, horrible sport. And I couldn't figure it out. And then 2 weeks later, I went to see a football game in London, a soccer game, and I saw Arsenal play Tottenham, and Tottenham's 3,000 fans had to have a police escort in and out of the stadium, and the people from Arsenal spent the entire 2 hours of the game swearing every kind of profanity at the Tottenham Hotspurs fans. That's the kind of rivalry I understand.
Let's go now to Paul, who joins us from Kent, Ohio.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have this theory about sports, and particularly teams like the Yankees or the Dallas Cowboys, somebody, teams who seem to have a competitive advantage for whatever reason, and who I think probably would serve most sports best if everyone hated those teams, except maybe for the people who live in the cities where they are. I think Notre Dame is a good example. Sorry to say that. but I think that... you know, the idea of this, you know, maybe helps the sport, having a team to rally against. But at the same time, you know, you have those fans that, for inexplicable reasons, like fans in Pittsburgh, where I'm from, who seem to like the Cowboys and things like that. So I don't know if you have a comment about that, but I can take it off the air. Thanks.
Oh, thanks for the call, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Joe?
People in Pittsburgh who root for the Cowboys are evil. And they should be given the same treatment that Braveheart gets at the end of that movie. And sometimes it happens. But to get to the other point that he talked about, I really do think that it's good to have a team that everybody hates. I think that right now the problem in the NBA is that with the Lakers out of the series, the people hate the Lakers because they're from L.A. and they have so much money and they have gaudy uniforms. And now they're out of it and nobody's going to watch this series because it's between two teams from franchises that no one cares about. And it's great that people hate the Yankees. Flipping that on the other side is, I know people from Boston are going to hate to hear this, but when the Red Sox lost the World Series in 1986, the famous Bill Buckner series where the ball went between his legs and Mookie Wilson scored the winning run. I watched that ninth inning in speechless disbelief with my newborn son on my lap, and I've never seen anything like that in my entire life, and I think that there's basically something wonderful about what happened that night because it really does reinforce the idea that, yes, in fact, there are curses. You could spend your entire life rooting for a team that's not going to win. The universe isn't fair. It's not over till it's over. All of those cliches, it's a game of inches, all of those cliches and all of those horrible things are really important for kids to learn at a very early age. And I personally don't think the Red Sox will ever win the World Series.
Joe Queenan with us from our bureau in New York. He'll be back with us after the break. Here are some of the headlines today at NPR News. Attorney General John Ashcroft gave testimony on Capitol Hill today. He defended his use of expanded government powers to fight terrorism and suggested that Congress expand those powers. NPR's Larry Abramson has that story. And the top editors at the New York Times have resigned, as we talked about earlier in this hour. Executive editor Howell Raines and managing editor Gerald Boyd stepped down today amid a storm of criticism over the way the paper handled former Times reporter Jason Blair, who made up elements to many of his stories. NPR's Robert Smith will have that report from New York, and you can hear that later on All Things Considered. We'll have more with Joe Queenan after the break. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Annenberg Foundation, from the Amundsen Foundation for support of the NPR Endowment, helping to ensure NPR's financial future, from NTI, working to strengthen global security by addressing threats from nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons, on the web at nti.org, and from the Charles Stuart Mott Foundation, online at mott.org, supporting efforts to promote a just, equitable, and sustainable society. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Amanda Hesser has cooked in the finest kitchens of Europe, but when she's really in the mood for something tasty, she whips up her mother's chocolate dumpet cake.
It's a very approachable, lovable cake.
A simple cake that tastes like a delicacy.
I mean, there's really nothing delicate about this at all.
Dumpet cake and the memories it awakens, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Thank you.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, join Ira Flatto on Science Friday for a look at the health of our oceans and the fish population within. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today, we're talking about the obsessive, compulsive, dark underbelly of sports fans. If you have odd or quirky exhibitions of sports fanaticism you need to get off your chest, if you have a child who's chosen a team you can't abide, if you need help living with a sports fan in your home, give us a call, 800-989-TALK, that's 800-989-8255, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Our guide is author Joe Queen, and his new book is called True Believers, The Tragic Inner Life of Sports Fans. And Joe, in the book, you report that you swore to yourself you would never write about sports. Why did you change your mind?
Because I'm a satirist. A satirist basically writes about things that he hates, like Barbara Streisand or John Ashcroft or something. And you tend not to write about things that you like. But also, as a writer, if you write about things that you like, it turns into work. So I like painting, I like music, I like sports. I've never written about painting. I've rarely written about music. And I've basically never written about sports. I got into it because my editor noticed that every conversation that we ever had got around to the NFL or the National Hockey League, that it was basically the subject that there were other things that I could talk about. You know, I could talk about Molière's plays, or I could talk about Shostakovich's music, but not in any with any kind of passion. But she noticed that I was really, really interested in sports, and that it was something that I thought about all the time. So she said I should write a book about it. And the only book that I had ever read that all sports books are about athletes. All sports books are about Larry Bird or Magic Johnson or Babe Ruth, and they tell you a lot of things that you already know. Like books about the Yankees, they went, they're great. There was a book, Fever Pitch, written by Nick Hornby, mm-hmm. who wrote High Fidelity, which is an absolutely fantastic book, by far his best book, and it's about how he organized his entire adult life around making sure that he got to see every Arsenal football game, to the point where he wouldn't go on book tours because he didn't want to miss one of their games. He goes every Wednesday and Saturday. And it was a great book because it covered a phenomenon that is very, very, very common, and yet people don't talk about it that much. And it's not unlike rock and roll, where everybody talks about Mick and Keith, but nobody talks about the fans, and clearly there's something going on with the fans, particularly when they're young, that's a very, very important social phenomenon, and it's basically only examined when somebody gets killed, when somebody gets trampled, when somebody ODs. But they're really, really interesting, powerful, unbelievably important social phenomena that basically go unexamined.
Let's get back to the calls. Tom joins us on the line from Chesapeake, Virginia.
Yes, I'm a rabid Tennessee volunteer football fan, and to the point that when Tennessee loses, I become dysphoric and irritable, which is of much consternation to my wife. And my father does the same thing, and Tennessee football is something that we've bonded around and has really enriched our relationship. And I'm not sure that we would be as close as we are if we didn't have football to talk about. And I can talk about Molière as well.
A lot of doors slamming. I know those plays. Tom, did you go to Tennessee?
No, my father got his master's degree there. I actually went to school in New England.
And how, you latched onto it because your father?
Yes, and I grew up in Tennessee some, and we've had season tickets, and it's just it's been the one thing that we could always talk about, no matter what else was going on.
Well, Joe,
in our relationship.
Joe Queen, and you can certainly identify with the depression and loss. You went to a psychiatrist for a while.
Yes, I did. I went to a therapist and basically said to him, I'm so sick of my teams. They make me so miserable. I want you to treat this like an addiction, like heroin or alcohol, and get me to break out of the cycle. And he immediately said, let's talk about your father, which is what always happens. It's always your father's fault. And my father was a heavy drinker. He was a rough guy. He threw us around a lot. He hit us. He put a lot of furniture through windows. But I cannot blame him for the Phillies blowing a 6.5 game lead with 12 games to go in 1964. He had nothing to do with that. So when I was with the psychiatrist, who was not a sports fan, you know, I have to backtrack by saying I got the ad for the guy out of the Village Voice, and it was $45 for 45 minutes worth of therapy. So I kind of scrimped. I mean, I could have gone as high as like $1.50 a minute and maybe gone a bit more top shelf. So in any case, he wasn't terribly sympathetic, but he did. There was an interesting thing that happened in our relationship, which is as soon as I started going to the therapist, all my teams started winning. Phillies had an 8-game lead over the Braves. 76ers went to the NBA Finals. The Flyers were playing really, really, really well. So I couldn't stop going to the therapist because he was my good luck charm. And as long as I went to see this guy, we kept winning. And as soon as I stopped going to see him because I was on a book tour and the 76ers lost the championship. And I've never forgiven myself for that.
Here's an email question from Scott Berg in West Valley City, Utah. I'd like to hear Joe give his opinion about how fans in cities where there are no big league teams should decide which team to root for.
I think you should just move, basically. I couldn't live in a city. I lived for a long time in New York City, which has 9 teams in the metropolitan area, none of which I like. I would have a hard time living in a city that didn't have a symphony orchestra, a great museum, and all 4 sports. I personally, just because I grew up that way. But I still think that there should be some regional basis. If you grew up in the South, you should probably root for the Atlanta Braves or one of those Texas teams. If you grew up in the Midwest, you should root for the Cubs. I hate going out and meeting somebody from Iowa who roots for the Portland Trail Blazers or for the Miami Dolphins. And it's like there's a guy in my neighborhood. I live in the suburbs of New York. There's a guy who started showing up in a Tampa Bay Buccaneers jacket a week before the Super Bowl. Can you get a clue? It's unseemly. It's unmanly.
Here's an email question from Andy in Durham, North Carolina. It's obvious that being an intense sports fan replaces the need to fight and conquer within us. This is one of the things you address in the book.
I believe truly, deeply in my heart, that without sports, men would have no emotional life. Not all men, because some men find other things to do with their time. But I do not have strong emotions about anything other than sports and the persistent inability of certain publishers to get me my checks on time. Other than that, I'm just fine. And I also think that there probably is some truth to the idea that it's a way of channeling the violent instincts into something that's less violent. I think one thing about it is that one of my friends pointed out that sports is one of the things that men can talk to each other about aggressively without coming to blows, which they can't do about money, real estate, or women.
Sometimes not coming to blows. Every once in a while. But anyway, let's get back to the phones. Patty joins us from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Very good, thanks.
Hey, I'm in Green Bay, and I just got my proxy from the Packers to vote on our share of stock that we have. But there's a deeper problem in our household. We're not only are we Packer fans, we're Wisconsin Badger fans and Milwaukee Brewer fans. And here's the crux. Our 7-year-old is a Cubs fan.
Oh, my.
I know. It's because of Sammy Sosa. Hitting his home runs.
Can't you just show him that videotape of the cork in his bat over and over again?
Could you?
Deprogram him, maybe?
He cried yesterday and told us we were wrong, that Sammy would never cheat. So I couldn't pull him out of being a Cubs fan. And, I guess it's a problem we have to deal with. But he is a Packer fan, and he loves Brett Favre. so that's a good thing. But he also loves Peyton Manning of the Indianapolis Colts. Is this normal?
I think you should take that kid in the back room and work him over. First of all, one of the great revelations to me when I was in Milwaukee last year, I go to Milwaukee every year for Festa Italiana, which was the 4-day music fest and food fest. It was a shock to me. Everybody else who goes to Wrigley Field always thinks of the Cubbies as being wonderful and lovable, and everybody loves them. And I was shocked to find out how many people in Milwaukee just hate people from Chicago, and particularly hate Cubs fans, because Cubs fans will come up and boo the Brewers and get the best seats. And it was a shock to me. I must say, your son does find himself with a really serious problem, because if I was living in Milwaukee or Green Bay and had to root for the Brewers, I think I would start heading north to Winnipeg.
Oh.
That is a long, tough, tough road that you've got ahead of you.
I don't know. Being a Blue Bomber fan is not that much better. Patty, thanks very much.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go now to Lisa, who's on the line with us from San Diego.
Hi.
Hi.
I have an etiquette question. What do you do when sports get down to the playoffs and your home team is not involved? Is there a way of like rooting for somebody and choosing them based on something else?
I think the sages have gone through this philosophical question. They came up with a solution. I think it's called gambling.
I think personally that most of the time I will root for the team that's from the geographical region that I'm from. So I will, as much as I hate the Boston Celtics, I would root for the Celtics over the Lakers because they're from the East.
That was the position I found myself in last year during the World Series. We went ahead and rooted for the Angels. They hadn't won in a long time. They were close to San Diego. That was about my criteria.
I have another organizing principle for you. As an American League fan, I would, even though my team was out of it, I rooted for the Angels as the American League team.
I'm from a National League city, but, you know, at least they were close by.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why I rooted for the Angels?
Because they beat the Yankees.
No, because I own Disney stock. And I thought if the Angels and the Mighty Ducks won, it would juice the stock and I'd be able to get a few bucks out of it. And it hasn't worked. But that was purely the reason that I rooted for them, because I thought my stock would go up.
So you can't even go a little further with your justification?
I can go further. I'll tell you exactly why I rooted for Anaheim. The Anaheim Angels came very close to being in the World Series when they were the California Angels in 1986. They had a 3-1 lead against the Red Sox, lost the last three games, and they lost the series because Donnie Moore threw a home run to Dave Henderson late in one of the games. And Donnie Moore committed suicide in the offseason. That Angels team was coached by Gene Mauch, who also coached the 1964 Phillies, the biggest jokers of all time. So there was some kind of weird psychic connection. And one other thing, I hate Barry Bonds. So I definitely wanted the Angels to beat the Giants.
Yeah.
Lisa, I hate all that jewelry.
We have
I did appreciate the fact that they beat the Yankees as well.
That was nice.
Yeah.
No comment.
Thank you.
All right, Lisa, thanks very much. From her same city, though, there's an email. I've been a San Diego Padre fan for my entire life, writes Garth Ward in San Diego. Despite constant ridicule from friends and family who live in cities with winning ball clubs, I persevere. The Padres, despite their success at losing, provide a sense of community and pride for me. They are my team. The sense of loyalty for a baseball team comes from a sense of loyalty to one's hometown. And Joe Queen, I think you'd agree with that.
Yes, it's a link to your past, and once you start letting go of those links, you just become this kind of vaporous entity that drifts across the landscape. So before you know it, you're switching political parties every month, and before you know it, you're lying about where you went to school and who you grew up with, and before you know it, your kids can't trust you. I mean, it's just great to say, I grew up in this town, these are the teams that I support, these are the teams that I always support. I have never been able to switch political parties because of my dad, even though I disagree with almost everything the Democratic Party does now. I can't switch parties because my dad was a Democrat.
You walk into that voting booth and Gene somehow guide your hand?
I'll tell you, voting for Jimmy Carter was the hardest. Was the hardest thing imaginable. But no, there's just that thing is that my son wants to move to Philadelphia. He wants to go to college in Philadelphia because he wants to be near the Eagles. I'm figuring, that's like wanting to be near the cemetery. I mean, what's wrong with you?
Joe Queenan's book is True Believers, The Tragic Inner Life of Sports Fans. He was with us from our bureau in New York. It's always good to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.